right. Well, thank you for everyone for joining. I'm going to kick us off. It's a pleasure to see you this morning. I'm Kimberly Schumacher, the Vice President of Partnerships and Services at CJP. I'm joined by my colleague, Carmela Kaplan, Vice President of Finance, Michal Kennedy, who also works on the finance team. And we are thrilled to be able to provide more and more resources for those of you who are managing during this very challenging time, not only managing personally, but also through your organizations to make sure they're as strong and vibrant as they can, acknowledging that COVID has been enormously hard in a variety of ways. We're pleased to bring you this workshop and really want to be committed, maintain our commitment to bringing you any resources that are helpful to you and your leadership in your organization. So please keep suggestions coming in on what would be helpful to you. You can email me afterwards or be in touch anytime. Okay, I do want to acknowledge this presentation. We're being recorded this morning, so I just want to be transparent about that. Pleased to introduce our partners at Bloom Shapiro, our finance and accounting partners, for this workshop and time to be able to talk about PPP and specifically forgiveness and any questions you may be thinking about. We're going to start with a presentation from our partners, Christine DeMena and Bill Moore. I'm going to turn it over to them. They're also joined by Tom Riley, as well as Jared from Bloom Shapiro. So they are a tremendous resource. I'm immensely have gratitude for them for being with us today to support us all in the community. So I'm going to turn it over to our partners now.
Sure. Carmela, do you want to say something first? You're good? Okay. Folks, this is Tom Kiley, and it's a K instead of an R. The Rileys are distant cousins, but good friends. And also Laura Kenny, a principal in our tax group, who's also familiar with CJP, is listening in this morning as well. So before I hand it over to Bill and to Christine to talk through the deck, for those of you that may not be as familiar with Bloom Shapiro, we're 11 offices in New England. We are a firm that has different industry disciplines, two of those being nonprofit and education. We work very closely with those groups. We're three things. We're tax strategy, we're accounting services. That could be audit, that could be review, or other types of accounting support. And we have a very large advisory services practice. So that advisory group looks at operations, operational efficiencies, looks at back office technology process. We have a risk management group. So those type of skill sets come to bear on a lot of the things that we're doing day to day with clients. And what happened in the February-March timeframe, we established a COVID resource center. And in addition to that, we built an economic recovery task force, of which Bill and Christina are integral parts of that. This group came together to build toolkits, do research on the CARES Act, was also heavily involved in providing guidance. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Christine to introduce herself and Bill, and then we can get going on the presentation. Thank you.
Christine DeMena, I'm a principal at Bloom. I've been here for about 18 years, and I spent the first bulk of my career at Bloom in the audit department, working with nonprofits, independent schools, and healthcare organizations mainly. I'm a more recent transplant over to advisory. I'm working in the risk advisory group and one of the team leaders for the PPP forgiveness program. So I'll be walking through some tips in using our toolkit after Bill's presentation, and happy to answer any questions you may have as well.
Thanks, Christine. Bill Moore, I'm a tax partner out of the Quincy office. I rotate between Quincy and Boston. I focus mostly on pass-through entities. The last few months have been very challenging, but also very exciting for us as a firm. And as Christine mentioned, I've spent a lot of time on the PPP, and it's an ever-changing document plan. So I'm not going to get into too many more qualifications of us, but I look forward to sharing some of the newest developments. And of course, it's an open forum at the end. So with that, we might as well get into the slides. All right, so this is just our quick disclaimer. Basically, it just says everything has changed so many times, so you can only take this content as accurate as of today at, 11 o'clock? I forget what time it is, but in any event, so subject to change, hopefully we're getting towards the end of the changes. We have heard there might be a second PPP plan. So just stay tuned. Our website is a great resource. As mentioned by Tom, we're updating that almost on a daily basis. And our toolkit that Christine will go through also gets updated frequently. And once you get one, you get all the updates, so you don't have to keep re-downloading. We're good on that screen. We can go to the first slide. So just by way of background, this started about 3.5 months ago, the end of March. They came out with the program. And it was, you know, a little bit of a nightmare administratively for the banks the first couple of weeks. They all got on board, applications started coming in, and all of a sudden we got to a point where we were out of money. So they put in a second plan, and there's still funds left, and I believe you can still apply through the first week of August if you haven't yet taken advantage of a PPP loan. And in the meantime, during all this, they basically came out with guidance that would either update or change some of the prior guidance that had come out. So you get, you know, different authoritative guidance. Some is more powerful than others. And it was just difficult for us, never mind people that don't really study tax for a living, to understand what was most relevant. And then early June, they came out with this HR 7010, which is basically the Flexibility Act. And that said, hey, you know, we thought this was going to last 8 weeks. We were hoping it didn't last more than 8 weeks, but we're very well aware that some business lines specifically haven't even opened in the past 8 weeks. So we're going to extend this program. And they originally said 75% of the proceeds needed to be used on payroll, which left 25% for non-payroll costs. And they changed that to 60-40. They also had some talk of being a cliff, meaning if you only had 59% on payroll, nothing might be forgivable. Early June, they came out and changed that. And then recently, they've come out with this form EZ that I'll talk about in a bit. So there's two different applications. One's about 5 pages with 6 pages of instructions, of course, to make it look really complicated. And then we have the EZ form, which certain users can fill out, which is intended to make it significantly easier. The last thing I'll mention on this slide is the 8-week covered period was changed to 24 weeks by the Flexibility Act. That is an election to still use the 8-week period. So it doesn't say you can't use 8 weeks anymore, but obviously if you haven't used all your loan proceeds, it makes sense to use more than 8 weeks. We'll get into some of the nuances around that. But again, as time has passed, rules that have come out or changes that have been made have been very employee friendly. And I say employee because if they're shareholders or owners, they have put some decent parameters around that where you can't be, you know, bonusing yourself or your limit over the 24-week period isn't as high as it would be if you're just an employee. So we talked about 24 weeks or 8, and our understanding is you can do anything in between. So if you use all your payroll costs, or I'm sorry, you use all your loan proceeds in week 11, we don't see any objection to using that as your application date and applying then. We think from a financial statement perspective, there's some benefits to that. We don't want to rush the applications, but also remember, there is a 150-day lag that could take place between the time you put in your application with your lender to the time the SBA approves it. The Form 3508EZ, really, they said, who's this available to? This is available to self-employed individuals, independent contractors, sole proprietors that don't have any employees. That's the first category. Then the second category is, well, if you don't fit into that bucket, but you didn't have any payroll decrease during the covered period, nor did you have any employee headcount decrease during the covered period. So the third bucket is, well, you might not have had any salary decrease during the covered period, but you did have an employee headcount decrease. And that could be for a myriad of reasons that were out of your control, as we know. So if it's one of those reasons that is out of your control, such as, let's just use the example of a restaurant, that only can have 50% capacity right now, well, clearly you're probably not going to have 100% of your workforce back for 50% of your revenue to be generated. So they've allowed a convenient form for anyone that falls into those buckets. We talked about the cliff. Again, 25%. I don't know that this is very applicable, but if anyone reduced any of your employees' salaries and they're under $100,000 annually, if it was more than 25%, you were going to have a reduction in your forgiveness amount. So just keep that in mind. Yeah, so recently they came out and said, if you don't have your full-time equivalents due to restrictions that I kind of mentioned, the CDC or some safety board, or you're just not really allowed to have 100% of your workforce back, you're not going to get dinged for that decrease in employee headcount. So that was very favorable. When we talk about the full-time equivalents, there's a lot of dates thrown around. Honestly, every time they came out with new guidance, you needed to understand another set of dates. And the most important date in my mind was always this safe harbor date, where they said, hey, if you lost employees in February, but you're back to that employee headcount at the end of June, this was old rule, well, then you're not going to be dung for your forgiveness percentage based on your headcount. Well, then they said, you got 24 weeks now, so maybe it's the end of the 24th week or the end of December 31st, 2020. And that would help some industries, but some industries don't ramp up in December. If you're a construction contractor, you might have your highest employee base in September. So one new date that came out is they use the date of the application for forgiveness. So if, I don't know, Bill Moore, a CPA firm that doesn't exist, had 40 employees at the end of July, I used all of my funds by the end of July, and I applied on that date, that would be a new date that you can now use for this safe harbor test. We kind of talked about the 8 weeks, 24 weeks, or anything in between is what I like to call it. You are going to be able to apply. Now, we've been talking to lenders every day. Most lenders aren't ready. If the lenders are ready right now to take applications, the SBA, I don't think as of yesterday, had its infrastructure ready. So it's hurry up and wait, but also, you know, in the next 4 weeks, I'd say, most people, if they've used up their loan proceeds, these applications are going to be able to be, the forgiveness applications are going to be able to be submitted. Certain payroll costs now can be deferred even with a PPP loan. Those are deferred, not forgiven. So basically what this is it's the FICA payroll tax. So 6.2%. You weren't allowed to do that if you had forgiveness on a PPP loan prior to, I don't know, maybe early June. They've changed that and said, hey, if you want to defer your FICA taxes, you can do that. I believe you have to pay 50% of it back at the end of 2021 and then the remaining 50% at the end of 2022. So again, cash flow wise, that helps. But just remember, at the end of the day, that is going to have to be paid back. One of the biggest concerns, and we can go to the next slide, one of the most up-in-the-air questions, probably the up-in-the-air question, is what happens to these expenses that are used for forgiveness? A lot of clients, obviously going through a tough Q2, might not have banner years from a revenue or net income standpoint, but one thing we have to keep in mind is right now, if you have a loan for $1 million and it's forgiven, 99 to 100% of those expenses are going to be running through your P&L as an expense. The IRS came out maybe in May and said, hey, we're not allowing a deduction for anything that is forgiven. And that's been a hotly debated topic, but I just want to keep people in tune to that. Yes, there's a good chance it changes, but right now we were just doing Q2 estimates for clients and we had to think through, well, what happens if they don't change it? And all of a sudden, you know, you use a $1 million example, it's all relative. That's a big dollar amount for taxes. What if the loan was $5 million and now you have your break even, but that's with $5 million of expenses that aren't going to be allowed to be deducted. Significant tax bill that could be coming next April, March, depending on your entity structure that you might not be anticipating. I'll just get into the you can go back, Jared, but I think I know that slide pretty well. The FTE calculation, that's really important. Again, there's several different dates, but there's two different ways you can calculate a full-time equivalent. You basically can do, if you're 40 hours or more, you're one. If you're less than 40 hours, you're a half. Or you can actually do the mathematical formula that takes however many hours the employee worked, say it's 8, and divide that by 40, well, that's 0.2. and you can get significantly different results. So when you're making sure you get your headcount back where it needs to be, it's prudent to run this calculation both ways to make sure that you are maximizing the headcount. So again, as literature came out and was revised, this payroll cost paid or incurred was a hot topic for a while. Paid and incurred, or paid or incurred. And the reading that came out that we think is accurate doesn't hold as much value now because you can use more than 8 weeks. But if you wanted to apply under 8 weeks, we think there's a position that you can get more than 8 weeks of payroll in because it's paid or incurred during the covered period. And the last payroll doesn't have to be paid during the covered period. It just has to be incurred during the covered period and can be paid after the covered period ends. So that was a way you might be able to get more than 8 weeks of payroll in. Same thing on the non-payroll costs, paid during the covered period or incurred during the covered period and paid on or before the next regular billing date. All that means is you can't, you know, incur it in July and decide, hey, I'm going to go delinquent, pay it in December and still count it. But you pay it on the next scheduled payment date, you're all set there. So everything's really helping maximize forgiveness based on, you know, the original intent of this being an 8 week issue. It's clearly more than 8 weeks. So we think most clients should be able to use their costs in the 24 week period. Wages paid to furloughed employees count. That was a big one. Bonus hazard pay can be used for forgiveness. So when it was an 8 week period, the maximum was roughly $15,385 per employee, which was simply $100,000 divided by 52 weeks times eight. So originally they didn't specify that what happens if you use 24 weeks, do you get an increased dollar amount per employee? The answer is yes. So that's how I came up with, or we came up with that roughly $46,000 number. That would be the same equation, 100,000 divided by 52 weeks in the year times 24. And that's for employees only. Remember again, 60% should be used for payroll. And that's a minimum. You could use 61, you could use 99, you could use 100 for payroll. Just emphasis is on when you forgive, when your forgiveness application goes in, you want it to be as perfect as possible because the lender in the SBA is going to have millions of these to look at. So the key would be make sure it's complete and accurate because our reading is if you forget something or if something needs to get kicked back for additional information, that 60-day clock that the lender has might restart. So key, make sure when you submit it, it's perfect. We talked about the cap, and that's per employee. The next thing just says, if you weren't performing work but were still being paid, when does it count? It counts when you would have performed the work. Again, duplication here on the furloughed employees, so better to say it twice than zero times because it was a hot topic, but if you're paying anyone that's furloughed, those wages do count. These are some of the tidbits that I probably weaved into the presentation, but you're more than, oh, you know what, one I didn't. You're more than likely to take a look at this. We can send this out in total to, for everybody. Is the loan maturity date. Originally, it was 2 years. Now, any loan that was incurred or taken out or approved after June 5th is 5 years automatically. But the question is, what if I took one out prior to June 5th? Can I get that five-year period? You can speak to your lenders, but the default would be it's a two-year period. Again, obviously, the key is we don't have much that isn't forgiven, so this isn't going to be as big of an issue as it once was. Again, remembering to restore your headcount by the date of the application, if you need to. There's other tests for the dates that if somebody wants us to go through the mechanics of how that works, we'll probably work through lunch to do it, but we certainly can help you in that area as well. And with that, you know, the borrower can apply at any time during the covered period. So the covered period could be 8 weeks, it could be 10 weeks, 12 weeks, or 24 weeks. And that's the last thing I'm going to touch on for now. I'm going to kick it over to Christine to kind of walk through our toolkit.
Thanks, Bill. No problem. So I just wanted to go through a few tips and kind of how to start. I know that everybody has received the link to our toolkit on our website. And when you first open the toolkit, there are a ton of different worksheets in there. So it can be a little daunting. as I've been going through and helping clients complete the toolkit and draft applications, I always like to start with this PPP Schedule A input tab. And this tab takes all of your employees that are employed during the covered period, has the average hours paid per week, and then the gross pay, the health benefit costs, and the retirement plan costs that you're asking for forgiveness for. I've gotten some questions on how to get from the raw data to this worksheet. So in some cases, you can do this in a separate Excel workbook, and you'll want to have the detail based on payroll by payroll dates so that you can easily tie back from here to that worksheet and then to the payroll records, because that those are items you'll have to submit along with the application for support. You could also add a new tab within the toolkit to do your covered period items as well. So once you've figured out first what your covered period is and you've gotten all the costs paid or incurred, you just need to add as many lines as you need to for how many employees you have, and then just copy and paste the information into the cells, and it should calculate the totals for you. You can go to the next slide. Thank you. That then flows up to the PPP Schedule A worksheet. So you'll need to link this, if you're adding lines in particular, to that input tab. And this is just taking the actual cash compensation. So this does not include the benefits cost or state or local taxes or the retirement plan. This is just that gross pay capped at the $15,385 per employee if you are using an 8-week period, or higher if you are using more than an 8-week period. It also calculates the average FTE for the covered period using the average hours that you input onto the input tab. And that's going to be important in a moment. Go to the next slide. So on the bottom of the PPP Schedule A, there are the full-time equivalent reduction calculations and the safe harbors. So the top part of this slide, if you can check one of these safe harbor boxes, so the first one being you have not reduced the number of employees or the average paid hours between January 1st and the end of the covered period, you can check that box and then just put 100% in that line 11 and not have to look at your percentage compared to a look back period. So I recommend first, before you go and start trying to calculate your average FTEs for all of the various periods, to go here and see if you can meet that safe harbor or the FTE reduction safe harbor one, if you're unable to operate due to the level of business activity. And that can be both indirect and direct, because a lot of the guidance comes more from the state level as to what can be open or closed and what you can be doing with your business. So if that comes indirectly through the state because of guidance issued by, for example, the CDC, this might be an area where you could check that box. There is the supporting documentation you need to have on file to take either of these first two safe harbors that are in the instructions. For that first safe harbor, no reduction of employees or average paid hours, you would have to have support on all of your payroll records from January 1st to the end of the covered period in case they did ask to see that. You also have the FTE reduction safe harbor too, and that looks at two different look back periods, and you can choose whichever one works the most in your favor. And that's either February 15th to June 30, 2019, or January 1st to February 29 of 2020. So if you have an idea of which one of those would work better, that is where I would start with the FTE calculations. And if you can go to the next slide. So there's a tab in the toolkit called Average FTE Calc. And here, this can take a lot of time. This can be pretty time consuming because you have to look at it on an employee by employee basis and input the hours for all of those various periods. So whichever period you think is going to be most favorable, and some payroll companies have reports that can run this for you. I will say, when I am looking at those reports and then actually putting the detail into this tab, I do find that my numbers may be different from the reports. The reports are not perfect. So you want to make sure that you're recalculating this and also having all the supporting registers. So if you were going to go with the safe harbor or the look back period of January 1st to February 29th, which is pretty much in the middle of the screen, you would want to make sure you have all the payroll registers on hand to support those hours. And again, this is probably what I found to be the most time consuming part, because you'll go through, realize one doesn't work, and then you'll have to look at the next one. And the safe harbor where you reduced your workforce but then restored it, if you actually didn't reduce it during 215 to 426, that's not going to count for you. Even if you have the same level of FTE on the date of your application as you did on 215, if you didn't actually reduce and bring it back, that's not one that you can use, unfortunately. Next slide. And then finally, I just wanted to touch on the wage reduction worksheet. So again, as Bill mentioned, this is if you actually reduce the salary or hourly wages of employees. This is separate from the FTE calculation. So even if you were to come through the FTE calculation with no reduction from that side, if you did reduce employees' hourly or salary wages, you could have an additional forgiveness reduction from here. So this is just important to look at the end, after you've gone through the FTEs and everything else, just to make sure that you have this. I will say they don't double penalize you. So if you did have a reduction in FTEs for an employee that also reduced hours, they don't make you take a double hit. So that's something to consider as well. Next slide. Okay. And then we'll do some, I'm sure we'll have some questions and answers, but I'll hand it back to Tom for a moment.
So let me speak to this for a minute. Carmela and I were talking. When we first got into this, we were dealing with a lot of clients day to day. And then we actually started to hear from non-clients. And because we had built this toolkit and calculators and produce guidance, we were getting a lot of inquiries from people. There are certainly a lot of organizations that are well in tuned with this and they're handling it 100% by themselves. We just wanted to make you aware that if you do need extra assistance, we have three levels of assistance programs that people are contracting with us on. At a very top level, we have a very large nonprofit that you would know that because of business conditions and priorities, they completely outsourced it to Bloom Shapiro. We'll sit down with their management and come to terms on the final submittal. We have other clients that kind of fall in between the gaps where they're doing a good portion of the work, but they're contracting with us on maybe 20, 30 hours of support where we're rechecking the calculations, we're helping them with elements of this. And then we have some that just need to do some sanity checks periodically with us, and we might even have like an hourly arrangement with them. So post this, I'll send that information out through Carmela and the team, but just to make you aware, if you do need assistance, we do have some programs there for you. And with that, Carmela, I think we probably want to hand it back to you and Jared and the team to talk about Q&A.
I think, Hannah, there's some questions in the chat. If you could just read them, and maybe you can address those, and then we'll open up to the floor.
Sure. So our first question is from Thomas. He says, our payroll company, Paylocity, has a PPP forgiveness toolkit. Do you have an opinion on it?
So I haven't personally used the Paylocity toolkit. I guess I can't comment specifically on their toolkit, but if it looks like they're following, I guess what we tried to do with ours was make sure that it mirrors the application. So ours leads you to where you need to get to for the application. So if their toolkit does the same thing, I would say it's probably fine. As long as you also, I would say go back and double check the numbers they're putting in there that they do tie out to what you think they should from the registers, because some of the other reports I've seen coming out of some of the payroll companies, like I said, aren't an exact match to what actually needs to go in some cases.
Bill, any comment from your perspective?
No, not much to add there either. I agree. I think that ours does, you know, just from what we've heard, it does a better job of matching up with the application. But I think that, you know, most of these payroll companies are very reputable, and I'm sure their application will get you to the right answer. I echo just making sure that they do give you the right values. There was some different payroll companies that had numbers that didn't make a ton of sense originally, but again, very robust companies. I'm sure they're all up to speed by now.
Yeah, the one problem I've seen with some of the payroll reports are that you can run them, they're run based on pay date. So if you're accruing for part of a period, I've heard from some clients, it's been difficult for them to get the report to give them exactly the range they're looking for. So there could be some reconciliation you may need to do to get to your numbers.
Yeah, and just another comment is that, Bill, I believe in Christine, we're on version 3 of our toolkit. Is that correct?
3
and plus, maybe. And we expect it's going to continue. That's why our Economic Recovery Task Force was put together, so we stay on top of this. Unfortunately, then Bill and Christine will tell you, the SBA puts out their updates on a Friday evening, so many of our people are spending the weekends trying to digest everything that they've come up with. And, you know, we have seen that law firms have put toolkits out. We've seen others in the market. We're being told by many that it's a pretty sound document, well aligned with the application. So I'll just leave it at that.
I've also put the link to the Bloom Shapiro toolkit in the group chat. So if anyone wants to save that or click on that, they can do that now. Richard, Strauss has his hand raised. If you want to come in and ask your question.
I did. I'm here actually representing Temple Near to Mid, but upon listening to all that's going on, my son bought my business and is a, you know, corporation. And he got a small loan. Is that considered taxable income in the scheme of life to him?
As of right now, you're not allowed to deduct the costs that are used for forgiveness. So if nothing changes, it's a reduction of an expense, but to get just granular with you, yes, it has the same impact.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. We do anticipate that could change.
All right, our next question in the chat. What about teachers whose employment ends during covered period but are not hired back until the fall? We were told that they meet the criteria for safe harbor employees equivalent to voluntarily resigned. How do we record on these worksheets?
So in the toolkit, if you have someone that voluntarily resigned, was terminated for cause, et cetera, during the covered period, I would, on Schedule A, where it asks for the average FTE, just put a 1 in for that person, rather than letting it go through the calculation, because the calculated hours for that person may not come out to a 1 based on the covered period. But they do not penalize you for voluntary terminations or terminated for cause during the covered period.
Okay, thank you. Our next question is, can you address seasonal employees, such as teachers, as to the FTE counts? Also, the forgiveness application needs to be made during the covered period? Is that the same question?
So this, if you have seasonal employees, there are other look back periods you can choose that could be more advantageous if you are having a reduction in FTEs. There is a seasonal option for you to look at as well, not just the January to February or the prior year, February to June. I would also say for schools, you might want to consider the FTE safe harbor option of not being able to fully operate. I have one school client that kept everybody on the payroll but closed down the pool and didn't really think about those employees. And because they are now in unemployment, they were not able to check the box that they hadn't reduced employees. So in their case, trying to gather the support for the change in business activity, which is not dependent on a percentage or how much you lost, it's just proving that you couldn't operate at your usual capacity, could be an option to look at as well.
Great. Our next question is, can you talk about the interaction between the FTE test and the dollars paid? What happens if hypothetically we paid out 100% in the 8 weeks, 80% on payroll, but our FTE count went down by 30%?
So the FTE count, it's going to depend on what costs you're putting in for forgiveness. I've looked at a few different scenarios. If you're only putting payroll costs in, it could be a different answer than if you have payroll and other non-payroll costs. I have one where if the loan was $3 million, they were able to gather $3.4 million of payroll costs during their 8-week covered period, but their FTEs were only 98%. So they had, in theory, a reduction, but because they were so far above the loan, it didn't end up as reducing their forgiveness. But I've also seen examples where either they didn't reach the full loan or they were putting in other costs that were non-payroll, and that could ultimately reduce your forgiveness. So I think you just need to run the scenarios and make sure that when you input things into the form and go through those calculations that it's working for you. And if you need to extend out a few more weeks to get your full forgiveness, that's something to think about as well if you were choosing a period shorter than 24 to begin with.
Yeah.
If that answers the question, hopefully.
Okay. Our next question, the 24-week period is for spending the loan, but December 31st is the period to restore FTE. If so, can we apply after the FTE count is restored, maybe after December 31st?
Yeah, so I think there's some confusion there, just maybe on the way it was presented, the question. So you can apply at any point once your funds are used. That December 31st date would be if your 24-week period ended there. I'm not really sure that if you look at the application, it says October 31st right now is the end date, which is incorrect because you can actually apply up to 10 months after when your covered period ends. So you would align your employees with the date that you apply for the application for that safe harbor test. So let's just say July 31st is the day that you use all of your loan proceeds. That would be for the safe harbor test, that would be the date. And again, Christine mentioned a very important point. If you don't have an employee decrease between, I think it's February 15th and April 26th, you can't use that safe harbor.
Okay. Our next question, if you use up the PPP proceeds in 11 weeks, your employee leaves voluntarily in week 12 to resign in order to go to grad school, and you apply for forgiveness in week 13, what are the implications?
So my understanding is the end of your covered period is when you need to have your FTE counts. They do ask for the number of employees at the time of the loan application on the application. So I think that causes some confusion. I don't know what they're going to do with that number, but for the purposes of the instructions in the form, it clearly is the end of the covered period.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think even if it wasn't for your case, you would be okay because I think they'd meet one of the criteria for not having to include that person because they left voluntarily if it was the covered period. But again, the date of the covered period ends is the key date there, as Christine mentioned.
And can you speak more to voluntary resignations and how to use the toolkit for this?
So So if you have somebody that voluntarily resigned or was terminated for cause, say your covered period started May 1st and they resigned on June 1st. On the Schedule A worksheet, I would put a 1 for them as their FTE for the whole covered period. And they do also say if you were able to rehire someone to fill that position, you could not do that because they don't want you to count extra. But you would put a 1 there, and then you want to make sure you have all of the documentation to support that in your files, which they've said it should be written documentation. So if an employee voluntarily left, that you should have some sort of letter of resignation that states that. And also, if it was a termination for cause, you should have something to support that as well, because that support they could ask for if they were to look at your file deeper or during audit.
Okay.
My understanding, though, is if they were an employee in your look back period and left before your covered period, that does not benefit you. You're not able to just put them as a 1 at that point. They have to have left or resigned during the covered period.
All right, our next question. I've heard rumblings about, about full forgiveness for smaller loans without requiring an application. Have you heard of this, and what is considered a small loan?
So I've heard this rumbling as well for loans under $150,000. I don't think they will say much more on this until they stop accepting loan applications, because if they say that's true, I think every company out there will immediately apply for $149,999, and that's not what they want. So I'm not sure where and if anything will happen with that, but that's all I've heard. I don't know, Bill, if you have any.
Exactly, agree. No, I agree. $150,000 is the rumbling, and I agree with your point too.
Neil Silverman, it looks like you have some questions specific to you. Would you like to ask them yourself?
Myself.
Oh, Neil, you're on mute.
He was good at the beginning.
You're good now.
All right. Yeah, okay, this is a follow-up to the question about use up the funds in 11 weeks, employee leaves voluntarily to go to grad school in week 12, apply for forgiveness in week 13. Is the end of the covered period 11 weeks, 13 weeks, or 24 weeks?
11.
So it would be 11. The only thing to think about if you're applying in the middle of the 24-week covered period is if you had salary or wage reductions for an employee that were greater than 25%. So say you had an employee making $500 a week, and during the covered period you were paying them, or you paid them in full, but at the end of the covered period they were $250 a week. That excess of 25% would be a reduction to your forgiveness, not only what had been incurred, but you have to extrapolate that over 24 weeks, over the entire 24-week covered period. So that's where some of those questions could come into play if salaries were reduced. But somebody leaving after the end of your covered period is not going to affect your forgiveness.
Okay, quick follow-up to that then again. Use up the funds in 11 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Employee, no wage reductions at any stage. Use up the funds in 11 weeks, employee leaves voluntarily in week 12, apply in week 13. Can I use the EZ form?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you qualify for the EZ form, you can use the EZ form.
Yeah, I think you're getting at, does that employee that voluntarily, remember, if they voluntarily left, it's irrelevant if they leave during the cover period, after the cover period, or, you know, next holiday season. So, but even in your situation there, you'd be fine, because you said you didn't reduce any of your employees and they all were paid the same amount.
Correct. But you're saying even if an employee leaves voluntarily during the cover period, you could still use the EZ form, assuming you didn't do other reductions and didn't reduce pay.
Right.
Okay.
I would just have support for that on file in case you were asked to support it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great. And Randy, you have a few questions about the easy form.
Yes, I do. We received the loan and we did spend it all within the 8 weeks. And we did not reduce any FTE staff. We did take 20% off of some of the highly paid people that were mainly over the 100,000. I think we can qualify for at least two of the items on the checklist for the easy form. Does that mean that I do not have to do all those calculations for the FTEs, or do I still have to go through all of that even though I want to use the easy form?
So for the easy form, I honestly don't like the easy form. I don't think it, I haven't seen it save much time personally, because if you're saying you have not reduced your employees, you still need to have all the support from January 1st to the end of the covered period to prove that. And you still, if asked, they still want to see the backup for what you're putting in for forgiveness. So if you're saying your payroll costs were $2 million, you still need to have that support to prove that on an employee basis. So me personally,
I just... our payroll registers?
You could. You could, as long as you're as long as you're comfortable that there were no adjustments needed and you have the registers, that's fine. But you'll have to make sure you have the registers from January 1st forward. And then if they were to look at that and you had voluntary terms during that period, you would have to have support for that too, because you want to be able to prove that you didn't reduce employees. And if they came back and said, well, 10 people left, how do I know that you didn't let them go? You want to have the support that they were voluntary.
Okay. And one follow-up question. If we were counting a semi-monthly payroll in our 8 week, but the last day was beyond the 8 weeks and the way the semi-payroll fell, do I just prorate that payroll to like 4/15 of the cost to put into my calculation?
So I would say I guess it depends. If you had a payroll that ended on a Sunday, but your forgiveness period ended on a Friday.
I'll tell you the exact. Okay. It was June 15th. Our payroll was a Monday and our PPP ended June 12th, that Friday.
So if nobody works on the weekends, I would argue that that entire payroll related to the covered period, because if you are able to, they want you to look at it as what day the expense was incurred on.
What about the 15th though? People work on that Monday.
Oh, okay. So that was the last day, not the pay date. Yeah. So I would take out that one day. So if you had 14 work days, or if you had 10 work days during the period, okay, however many work days, I would try to prorate it that way.
That's what I did.
If that's too hard, you could do it just as a percentage, but prefer you to do it exact if you can.
Okay.
Just want to interject with something with that. Cause Randy, I have the same situation where I'm using the 8 week covered period, and I have 1 week that went into the next period. So I'm accruing 1 week, but that 1 week accrual is bringing some of my employees that are under 100 to that $15,000 max. And I just want to make sure that people understand that $15,385 max is a hard and fast number. So even if you're accruing, or if somebody left and you gave them a vacation payout, that $15,000 is a firm number.
For wage compensation, correct?
Yes, yes.
Yes. Thank you.
All right, it looks like we have one question left in the chat, which is good because we're almost out of time. Before I ask this question, if anyone has any last questions, feel free to put them in the chat, and we will hopefully can get to them. So our next question, are you penalized for a layoff or just have to repay the difference in what you have paid them for the pay period?
So I think if you had furloughed and brought them back, that might be where you could look at the FTE safe harbor employee counts on 215. You had a dip down because you furloughed and you brought them back. So that's one way to avoid any sort of penalty. If you furloughed and didn't bring them back, then you would have some sort of reduction in your forgiveness. Unless you could meet your FTE counts somehow.
Yeah, unless you brought someone else back for a different position or something, but.
Yeah.
And one more. Carrie is trying to only use the PPP funds for payroll. So it is the period, the original 8 weeks or the expanded 11 weeks?
So if you're trying to do, and I have a lot of schools that are trying to get this out the door as quick as possible because they don't want to be under Title IX for any longer than they have to. So they're only using payroll costs and they're trying to do the 8 weeks. So your 8 week period, your covered period can include more than 8 weeks of payroll depending on when the payroll is paid or incurred. And if you are biweekly only or more frequently as to that than that for your, when you pay your employees, you can elect an alternative covered period as well, where you start your covered period on the first day of the first pay period following your loan disbursement. So in some cases, instead of only having 56 days in your covered period, it can actually expand up to 70 days of payroll if you're lucky enough to fall in the dates correctly. But it's still considered an 8 week period, even if you're pulling in, say, 10 weeks of payroll because of how it fits with the paid or incurred in the period.
Okay, that's all the questions I see in the chat. Does anyone have any last minute questions in the last 5 minutes?
Carmela, I see you're going to be exiting for another meeting. I'll send you some follow-up information to this. I think some of you already have the slides. We'll make sure you have information on our assistance programs. And then, frankly, I think it really comes down to if you have questions, give me a call and we can facilitate getting some of our subject matter experts connected to you.
Yeah, it's a question I think come in. Does the date of the loan received affect your ability for the 24-week covered period? And that answer is no.
However, you cannot elect the 8 week if your loan was after June 5th.
5th, correct.
Thank you all. I want to thank all of our participants for asking your questions. And thank you, a tremendous thanks to our partners at Bloom Shapiro for offering this session and the toolkit. So as a reminder for folks, on the CJP website will be this toolkit and other resources that we hope will be helpful. And again, please feel free to reach out anytime. Take care, everyone, and thank you.